I guess I just want to start with saying, how long have you been working for Starbucks, and how long have you been trying to unionize your workplace?
I started working for Starbucks 6 years ago this month, or actually August, so this past month. And I started organizing maybe 8 months into the job, and then went public with the union after about a year with the job. So I've been public there for 5 years organizing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So 8 months in, you started unionizing, and then another 4 months after that, you went public?
Yeah, yeah.
Was that a hard decision to go public?
Actually, it was a decision that was made for me, and it's kind of a tale in the union of, like, one of the number one ways of not, like, that's not best to go public. luckily, I stuck with it. Luckily, or unfortunately, I was stuck at that job for so long that eventually was able to do things a bit better, I feel. But I was actually outed as being a union member because I went to this other union member from another store had a birthday party. I went to his birthday party to meet people, and I was introduced to a lot of folks. And one person I was introduced to is this guy, Adam Perez, who was at the time a shift supervisor at this particular barista's store, which supervisors can be in the union because they're not actually management, according to the law. So he was invited to this party with a lot of union members present without anyone realizing that he had just been promoted to an assistant manager and was being transferred to my location. So when I was pointed out to him as, like, this strong union person that's going to take over this one location, was how it was framed to folks, when I went back to work the next day, he was there. And he was introduced as my manager, and we had, like, this very, like, knowing look at each other. And I left the floor, went to the bathroom, called, like, another union member to ask their advice, and they were like, "Do you have a pin on you?" Like, meaning a union button. And I was like, "Yeah, I do." And he was like, "Okay, you need to put it on now." And I was like, "Okay." Because we were pretty certain that any moment he could have me fired for any number of, like, false infractions or, like, policy violations that I was unaware of or whatever the case is, and we would have no grounds to argue that it was based on being a union member. So I went public that day, but I was the only member in the store. I was the only public or non-public member in the store for about a year after that.
Oh, wow.
Because you just become this, like, walking target from management, and coworkers want to stay away from you to keep their own jobs, so it's hard to get them to meet with you outside of work. It's hard to get them to talk to you about anything they're concerned about because they don't want it to get back to management in some way. So it's like you're kind of a leper. Like, management actually referred to the union as a virus. So it's like...
In what context was it at the store that you were at?
In general, because we, with Starbucks, if you're employed at one location, you can pick up shifts at other locations. And in a lot of ways, that is how we've spread the union, is people knowing each other from these different locations. And the company knows that, we're aware of it. Like, it's just like the way that we operate, just like how they indoctrinate people into the Starbucks corporate culture in the same way. But we're trying to organize for good, right? So they refer to us as a virus. So there's, like, there's emails where they refer to the IWW as a virus. And then there's also conversations that people have had with managers where they were referred to as viruses and, like, pests and parasites. So they saw it that way. Is like, anyone that comes in contact with us will then catch the virus, you know, and be considered, they would call them, if you were anti-union, you're pro-Starbucks, is like what they were called in the memos and everything. And then if you're for the union, like an IWW member, you would either be referred to as just IWW or you'd be referred to as anti-Starbucks. So it's like completely missing the point, right?
Right. So one of the things that I thought was awesome when I was reading about your efforts and the other efforts of people at Starbucks to unionize was that you are an IWW union. And so I wanted to know, like, how, basically for lay people who've never heard of IWW, like, just kind of maybe who are they?
Yeah.
And then, like, how you guys decided to be. Because I saw Daniel Gross speak at a recent thing, and he was speaking about how much more effective that kind of everyone, everyday, direct action type of union winds up being than these, like,
working towards an election goal.
Right. So it made me think it's this model of unionizing that I wish was more prevalent and was still more popular, and I hope that it is, like, making a comeback.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you could explain.
Yeah, sure. The IWW, so Industrial Workers of the World, has been around since 1905 and is a union that has always been rank and file and horizontally run as opposed to vertically run like these other unions. Mm-hmm. And we're one of the oldest unions to exist for a sustained amount of time in the United States. But in the last couple of decades is really when massive amounts of organizing were coming back. The IWW was back in the news and started really making leeway in retail sectors and courier sectors. Truckers had some really successful gains. Bike messengers were one of the first like major campaigns, even before the Starbucks campaign, to start getting leeway under the IWW's name. Actually, as far as like the Starbucks campaign, how it ended up being linked with the IWW, is that Dan Gross was already an IWW member, and he had tried to organize at Borders, and he had tried to organize at another major corporate place that I don't remember the name of. And both times, like, didn't find much success, didn't find much support, both within the IWW trying to support this younger retail worker when it's used to organizing, like, older folks in the building trades as opposed to retail. Mm-hmm. So that was a pushback. But then he couldn't find the support of coworkers, not knowing anything about unions. He didn't feel he had the information he needed. So then when he wanted to organize at Starbucks, he started organizing his coworkers just together without any names attached to it, just literally working for their one location to be better with specific demands and strategy put in place to try to get those things met. And originally, his coworkers weren't so into going with the IWW. The IWW wasn't very supportive of the campaign to begin with. Mm-hmm. So they reached out to these other business unions that might care about organizing in retail and fast food. Mm-hmm. And nobody wanted to touch the Starbucks campaign with a 10-foot pole. Mm-hmm. Every location has so few number of members that it doesn't equal the dollars in dues that like a major union would want.
Uh-huh.
So they constantly kept pushing it aside and not willing to help. So his coworkers went with the IWW. I don't know exactly how it ended up starting.
Right.
They went for the election process because coworkers voted for it. Uh-huh. Best of my knowledge, Daniel was never for the election process.
Right.
But they went for that. But the National Labor Relations Board is allowed to dictate what the possible bargaining unit might be of a business as far as organizing. And his coworkers were trying to argue that this one location is a bargaining unit. So if we have 51% of the workers here signed and vote on the union, then this is a union, individual union shop. Mm-hmm. And the National Labor Relations Board, with the pressure they received from Starbucks attorneys, as well as the fact that I don't feel that they took the union seriously to begin with, the IWW as a whole, but also the Starbucks organizing. Mm-hmm. And so they decided that a bargaining unit was significantly larger. A bargaining unit was almost half of Manhattan, and that this small group of like early 20 somethings that are working mm-hmm. these shit jobs and going to school and caring for families are somehow supposed to only volunteer effort wise, because mm-hmm. we don't pay anybody in our union because we're broke, right?
Mm-hmm.
So volunteer wise, they're supposed to somehow in 6 weeks' time get the majority of like half of Manhattan to vote yes on a union.
Right.
So obviously they set it up so that they would fail.
Right.
So they just withdrew the election, and ever since, every time it's come up, we've always voted down the idea of going for an election again.
Right.
And instead have gone for the Solidarity Union as a model that the IWW follows, as opposed to these other business trade union models. And that the basis of that is that literally every worker is responsible to the other worker,
mm-hmm.
Meaning that literally an injury to one is an injury to all, which is a huge concept to these other unions, but also just to any worker in general, to think that something happens to me as an individual in this one individual job that's one store out of maybe thousands of locations of this individual company, mm-hmm. and this entire union as like an international union is going to react mm-hmm. to this one thing happening to this one person.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crazy concept, and we've had a lot of major successes from standing up for every individual.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big part of why we're able to get members. I think it's a big part of why our members stay members their entire lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of wobblies, as we're called, like we end up, like their children are wobblies and their children's children are wobblies, and like
mm-hmm.
that's just kind of how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it says a lot that we all react on behalf of even just the one.
Right.
So, and the other thing that I really like about the IWW in a difference to these other unions is that you don't have somebody who's never worked your job sitting in a room with you telling you how you're supposed to organize your job and telling you what concessions you're supposed to make so that you can get these other things that you need, you know, and telling you, oh, we know you're worth that much money, but you need to ask for this much instead. You know, like, you don't have those people coming in telling you that that's what's right. Instead, you have just your coworkers who know the job, who know you, and you're making collective decisions about what next steps to make. And usually people end up doing what they feel most comfortable with, which then makes them, like, build up their thick skin for organizing, basically, and eventually, like, the smallest direct action on the floor can become the largest, such as, like, an occupation of a workplace, like the hot and crusty that just happened. You know, so it's like, it really can build up in that way, but that's creating people power, and that's not really what these other unions are working towards. Like, they want, like, large numbers out to demonstrations and out to voting booths, but not, like, the individual shop floor actions that they can't have as much control over or say in, you know?
Right. And what are, you said that that's how you guys have had some successes, and what have those successes been?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's multiple times that we have been able to get fired union members their jobs back without any legal proceedings at all. One such example that I'm most proud of is the first person that I was able to ever get to join the union at my store at the Union Square East Starbucks was in 2008, this woman, Chanel. She joined the union. She had two children, was working full-time at Starbucks. Excellent worker, excellent person. And then she was pushed too far at work and joined the union. And then she went public with her union membership. And literally the very next day after she wore a union pin on her hat, she was called into a meeting. I wasn't at work that day. And she was called into a meeting. I say that because they don't do that. They often don't do that shit when I'm around. So she was called into a meeting with the district manager, the regional manager, who are rarely in the stores, and the store manager. And she was told that she needed to remove her tongue ring, or she would be fired. This is a tongue ring. Like, Starbucks has, like, no visible tattoos and piercings policy. However, this is a tongue ring she had been working with her managers aware of it for a year and a half before that day, and had never had an issue. So even though she knew the policy and she was okay with adhering to the policy, she decided to take an ethical stand and say, no, I know you're doing this because I'm a union member, so I'm not removing my tongue ring because you have other people working down there that have visible tattoos and piercings, and you're not doing anything to them because they don't have a red pin on their hat. So they fired her.
On the spot?
On the spot, yeah. And when we were made aware of that, I made a phone call to a union member, Aaron Kaur, in Twin Cities in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I made a phone call to him, and I was like, I don't know what to do. It's so horrible to have your coworker fired. I just feel, like, so to blame. I feel miserable because I got her to sign up, and she has kids, and she has more at risk than me, and I just felt so awful. So I was really just confiding in him because he had just had a coworker fired who was in the union. So then between the two of us, we came up with this idea that there was another location in Minneapolis at the Mall of America where, well, in Bloomington, Indiana, at the Mall of America, where we had one location that had five union members working that closing shift. So we decided to ask these members if they would do some small direct action on the floor on behalf of Chanel and Neil, who was the other person who was fired, and then we'd see, like, what the next steps are from there. So what happened is that evening, so this is the same day she was fired, only 1,000 miles away from workers that have never met her or heard from her, had never heard of her in their lives. What they did was every 10 minutes at work for the entire closing shift, they would stop working entirely for a full minute and announce to the customers that they weren't making any more drinks or ringing anyone else up for this entire minute because Starbucks fired two union organizers, Neil Linder in Minneapolis and Chanel Simon in New York City. And they did it the entire closing shift. And then that was a Friday. And then Saturday happened, and then Sunday happened. We're planning all these pickets, planning all this action, planning legal stuff, talking to lawyers, but we haven't filed yet. Monday morning, I get a phone call from Chanel that she gets a personal call from the district manager inviting her to return to work if she wanted to just put a retainer in her tongue with no other explanation and nothing else, and she returned to work.
Oh, that's great.
And that's absolutely insane. Like, that's the fastest reinstatement I've ever heard of a union organizer.
And it, I mean, I haven't done that much research on it, but I just started doing research, and I sort of thought when you were telling the story about getting outed and your fellow union member said, put your pin on now, because if you put your pin in, it would be illegal to fire you, right?
Yeah.
So it would be illegal to say to her, you're fired because you're a union member. So what they do is they make up an excuse, like the tongue ring, right?
Exactly.
But it would have been illegal for them also to fire the people for doing the direct action.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Right. If they had been fired or reprimanded for the action that they took,
right.
we can make a legal basis that their miniature work stoppages were a part of protected activity.
Uh-huh.
And then have to see how the board feels about it, the labor board. But ultimately, like, in my opinion, we would have been legally correct.
Right.
But they didn't do any reprimands against any of those workers.
Right. And it would have been a PR nightmare for them.
Yes.
Also, right.
That's the other thing, is our campaign, a big amount of the make or break of our campaign has been our attachment to the media and our press releases and our relationship with different media outlets. And that's a big part of why the campaign has been struggling in the recent years, because Starbucks went out of their way to purchase large portions, like, literally, like, MSNBC, for example, has covered us before and covered us fondly on the internet. Not on any of their TV shows, but on the internet. They've covered the Starbucks campaign and supported us.
Uh-huh.
And then Starbucks gave, I think it was $100,000 to MSNBC in order to be the major sponsor for the Morning Cup of Joe program on TV.
Uh-huh.
And ever since then, we haven't had them pick up a single story. They don't answer our phone calls. The same reporters that we knew no longer work for them.
Uh-huh.
And we received one email back that was like, we will not be covering the Starbucks union.
Huh.
And now there's actually, like, coffee that I sell at work that says, like, Morning Cup of Joe on the side.
Right. So it seems to be really directly related.
Yeah, and there's been times where we've been covered favorably. Like, Daniel tells the story of we were covered favorably in Newsweek.
Mm-hmm.
And then the editor who released that article then spoke later of the fact that he was harassed by Starbucks, and his boss was harassed for not firing him after printing this article.
Wow.
So it just tells you, like that's what you're upset about. You're upset about minimum wage 25-year-olds, you know,
right.
like, writing a press release on a borrowed laptop. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
It's, like, it's
trying
just really amazing.
For fair working conditions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's, like, you have all that money to invest in that.
Right.
But then you don't want to concede to the... It's so clear when that's just all about, like, not giving up your power and not really about not having the means to give people what they want.
Right. It's the message. Like, we'll put our resources into completely trying to shut you down, but we won't give you a raise or what, you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but there's been a lot of really positive things. There's been a severe improvement, I feel. Like, in my original store, sexual harassment from customers was really extreme.
Really?
And there came a point where many of us at the store, whether people were in the union or not, just because there was such a strong union presence throughout the years, people knew who to go to for, like, advice about policy, advice about the law, if they were being screwed over. And union workers stood up for workers that never joined the union, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So it ended up being where I coined it as if it was like a union shop, even though not everyone was official members,
mm-hmm.
because we acted as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And people looked up out for each other in particular ways. And one excellent example of that is when several female coworkers and I had all decided that we weren't going to be taking any more sexual harassment from the customers. We didn't like them calling us baby and honey and bitch, and we didn't like being called all these things, only to turn around and have our manager, who's supposed to deal with it, but in actuality apologizes to the customer for however rude we were for being called these things,
right.
and then gives them coupons and free drinks as a reward for mistreating us at work, right? So we decided to no longer call on management when we were being harassed, and instead we just weren't going to serve them or anyone until they left.
Mm-hmm.
So this turned into like the very first time I remember it happening. My friend was on bar and she had her back turned to where the customers see you, because she's making a cold drink, so it's like the station in the back. So she has her back turned, and this guy was trying to get her attention about his drink she was making, or was about to make, I don't know. And I don't know if he called her a slut or something similar to that, like, it was really harsh.
Mm-hmm.
And she just, like, slammed the pitcher down, like, the blender, just down on the table, stood there with her back turned, and was like, that's not my name. And then other female workers heard her reaction and went to ask her what happened. And then it went down the whole line, people on the register, people making the food, and it was mostly women working on the floor, and it was all the union workers were there. Mm-hmm. And everybody just stopped ringing people, stopped everything, and, like, went down to the end of the bar and told him he had to leave and that nobody was being served, including him, until he left. Mm-hmm. And if he wanted a refund, he could have a refund, or he could just leave. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't going to get anything. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, the manager was just in the back doing whatever they do when they're not doing anything, right? Mm-hmm. And collecting all the money while we work.
Right.
I'm not even certain the manager even knows that that ever happened.
Right.
And it was, and from then on, like, it became this thing where people knew that you couldn't behave that way, because right. this happened multiple times
right.
where that was just how it was handled, and management right. wasn't called, and they weren't brought into the situation because they never handled it right, you
right.
know?
Right.
So it became this thing where, like, I even had this regular customer who, a lot of the customers were workers for other retail spots in Union Square, which is great for when you want to organize retail.
Right.
So she comes in from working at, I think, Children's Place, and she was just like, yeah, I heard about that, and she's talking about how we shut down some guy and pushed him out, and how she wished that she could do that at her job and everything. And then she applied at that location, and she wasn't getting hired, and somebody suggested she apply somewhere else, and she goes, no, I know this location is where they don't let that happen.
Right.
And right. I thought that was a really big deal, you know?
Yeah,
like, that means
is.
A lot to have that reputation for such a large location, you know?
Right, and it means the solidarity is really a real thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this woman wanted to be a part of that.
Right.
You know, and that meant everything.
Yeah.
And it was such a change, and it was so awesome.
Yeah.
And we didn't put up with any customers being rude ever. Like, that, right. it started with the sexual harassment, right?
Right.
But then it went into, like, oh, you want to be rude? Okay.
Right.
Now your drink is at the end of the line. No one is going to make this better. No one is going to speed up your beverage. Like, you have
right.
to just deal with it.
Yeah. Right.
So it was, like, it was
I
a lot
like
better.
The idea that the union, the way that you guys are enacting it, demands respect from managers and from customers.
Mm-hmm.
And because I feel like in our culture, I guess what I was trying to get at is, like, in our culture, I've been talking to a friend about this recently, but I think the things that are most necessary for survival and most important, we pay and treat people the worst for, like healthcare, like home healthcare,
mm-hmm. education,
food workers,
like teachers,
yeah, things like that for some reason. Like a lot of food workers, I mean, they feed us, like they give us the coffee that keeps us going, they do all these things, and yet they like are kind of... you all are thought to be in this position where you just have to take whatever from
yeah,
whoever.
They yeah, want, they feel that we should be begging.
Right.
You know? I think that's so interesting. It's just like, you need us to sustain, like, a whole city all day.
Right. Exactly.
Like, you know, restaurant workers in New York and everything else, like, you need us to, like, sustain the entire city all day and make a huge amount of revenue for the city.
Right.
And all this other stuff, and it's just, like, zero appreciation back. You
right.
know?
So what were the conditions that you saw when you got there that made you want to organize?
Yeah, the first time, the time when I finally was like, okay, I'm absolutely joining the union this minute, was, because originally when I was hired at Starbucks, I was aware there was organizing and all this stuff, but I wasn't getting involved with it because, one, I didn't want to risk my job, didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Two, I honestly liked my location that I worked at in Chicago. And I was like, oh my God, this is the best job I've ever had. Like, this, you know, it pays shit, but it pays more than other things that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
And I get free coffee, and mm-hmm. I get to, you know, learn things about coffee. And I just really thought, oh, this is great. And then when I transferred to New York, I worked 2 weeks straight, 40-hour weeks, where they were 8-hour shifts, and every single shift, they would put me on the, like, I guess I was really good at making frappuccinos, like, an assembly
uh-huh.
line. So they put me on the frappuccino station, an assembly line order, for 8 hours straight, not moving my position, and not giving me a single one of my legally mandated breaks.
Oh.
For 40 hours a week for 2 weeks in a row.
Right.
And, like, I kept trying to talk about it, I kept talking to other people, and I kept being like, I know they're supposed to rotate us. Everyone's like, yeah, I know, but they don't. I'm like, I know that I'm not supposed to be not having breaks. They're like, yeah, but they don't have time for breaks, everyone keeps calling out, there's no time for breaks. So I'm like, no, that's on them, that's not on us, blah, blah, blah. They can call people in, we're in a district with, like, hundreds of other baristas, you can call in to do this, you know. And I kept trying and trying and trying and thinking that they were going to fix it in some way. There was a couple of times where the boss was like, oh, well, I'll buy you lunch next time, and I'm sorry you didn't get your break. And then I wouldn't get my break the next day, so there's no time to buy me lunch.
Right.
Right, so it's just these empty promises
right.
to, like, make up for fucking me over, basically. And I wasn't the only one by any stretch. It was all of us that were screwed like that. But I couldn't take it anymore, like, mm-hmm. at all. So so that was when I got active. Like, I met up with Dan and Tomer Malky, who was the last remaining member from the previous committee that was mm-hmm. at that location. But he was, like, the last one. Mm-hmm. So I called Tomer, met with both of them, and was just like, I can't do this.
How did you know about them?
I already knew about the IWW from Chicago. I had signed up at some event, got a union card, didn't know anything about it, didn't know what to do with it, wasn't given any information on how to do anything with it.
Right.
You know, I was like 20, just didn't know anything, so I completely lapsed. I think I paid dues the first time and didn't pay again, mm-hmm. Until then the Starbucks campaign went public in at the Logan Square location in Chicago, mm-hmm. right at the time that I got hired at the Sears Tower location.
Mm-hmm.
So right off the bat, they were having these captive audience meetings where they'd bring all the workers in and talk shit about the IWW.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting in these meetings texting my friends who are active members of the IWW. I'm like, they just said that, you know, the IWW is anarchists and communists seeking to destroy the U.S. government. Is that true?
Okay.
You know, like, just
right.
sending these texts and stuff.
Right.
And I'd already been an anarchist, so I just thought this whole thing was funny.
Right.
And there was like this citywide raise right after they went public, which is what they had predicted, which is what happened in New York.
Uh-huh.
And it's all about like the union got us that raise. Like
right.
I know for
the
a fact
threat
that,
of the
yeah.
union, right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Yeah.
It was just like, no, we love you, don't you see this? Like,
right.
that same year that the Logan Square store went public, there was a raise, like, right away.
Uh-huh.
The raise was substantial. It was, like, 30 cents or so that everyone got across the board, which is really huge at Starbucks. When
no,
you're,
it is.
You're,
yeah.
like, begging for 22 cents every 6 months, you
sure.
know?
Sure, yeah.
So there was that right away, and then there was also a Christmas bonus of, like, $250 every partner. Every employee, and that came, like, that was the union, too, you know,
right.
and New York had done that exact same pattern,
uh-huh.
and they were doing a good job with their press releases of explaining that was the pattern they were predicting and had happened, you know.
Right.
So I was signed up to their newsletter, but I wasn't involved by any stretch.
Right.
So then when I wanted to join, when I was moving to New York, I specifically Googled Starbucks Union New York, and I was like, I should at least transfer to a store that, like, has it,
mm-hmm.
that way if I need it,
mm-hmm.
and then it turned out I really desperately did, so
mm-hmm.
so I signed up with it, but it was kind of crazy.
And how many members do you guys have?
The Starbucks campaign?
Yeah.
The Starbucks campaign, publicly, we claim 300 employees mm-hmm. in the States and Canada. But our numbers fluctuate
cool.
greatly, and
yeah.
then we have lots and lots of elements of the campaign that are undercover in cities mm-hmm. and states where we haven't been public before,
uh-huh.
That are currently organizing, because
mm-hmm.
we're trying really hard to break previous patterns of having to go public because of the company having such unlimited resources to stalk us and find
mm-hmm.
us out.
Right.
You know, like,
has that been something that's happened
a
where
lot.
They really try to find out who's?
Yeah, yeah, they're very big with spying. Actually, in our trial against them, it came out that... Sassy, come here. In the trial, it came out that there was over 100,000 individual emails and memos that were all, like, spy files, is what our attorney refers to them. It was,
uh-huh.
like, all spying on workers, like, following them home, seeing what workers went with them, trying to figure out who's dating who might know who talks to who. But...
Right.
Yeah, so they definitely spy on that stuff. They definitely find things out. There's been a few people that the campaign were kind of in consensus that we believe that they were fired for just being friends with, like, me and other prominent organizers on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
Like, stuff like that. Like, there was a worker who was fired for sharing a note that I wrote that was sarcastic about customers.
Uh-huh.
Like, they shared it on their Facebook. Their boss saw it. Their boss interrogated them about the union. This is someone in a state I've never been to.
Right.
Interrogated them about the union and then fired them for some infraction that they didn't know happened, which
right.
probably didn't.
Right.
Right. And then, like, writes me to be like, I was in trouble for posting that note. It's like,
right.
I don't even know you. You know what I mean? Like,
do you find that happens a lot, that people get, I mean, people who are involved in the union or suspected of being involved with mm-hmm. the union get written up or fired or some kind of repercussions?
Absolutely. It's almost always, frankly, there was multiple times in my time at Starbucks where coworkers would jokingly, I've always overwhelmingly had the support of my coworkers, but it's still, like, a big part of that is being able to joke about how much they spy on me and my friends and everything else. So it would be like, oh, nobody hug me, I'm poison, and everybody would be like, ah, she's poison, you know.
Right.
So it's just like, It just became this thing that everyone was well aware that they weren't allowed to, like, friend me on Facebook, like, mm-hmm. talk to me. They shouldn't get me to cover their shifts. Like, workers would be interrogated
about...
They
couldn't get you to cover their shift.
Yeah, like if I said, yeah, I'll take your shift at, like, another store. I was present multiple times where workers are on the phone with their bosses and have their bosses on speakerphone, being like, yeah, I have someone to cover my shift. Oh, who? Liberty from Union Square. Oh, didn't I tell you she can't work here? Like shit right. like that, like, across right. the board. And that just happened all the time. Mm-hmm. So it was very clear to people. And it took a lot of bravery on the part of my coworkers to even, like, say that I was the one covering their shift. Or
right.
to say that they had spoken to me about something or admit to having my phone number. Things
right.
like that.
Right.
Like, it was just a really big deal.
Right. Have you They're found terrible. That you feel differently going to work since you became involved in the union? Like, do you feel, like, more community or...
Oh, absolutely.
More empowered, or is there some kind
yeah,
of, like...
Yeah, no, I... This there's a phrase that we started a while back. There was a meeting of like upper management that happened at one of the locations I worked at, where a union member who was a busser overheard this meeting. And in the meeting, the regional manager was like, she kept talking about their plan to eliminate union members from the location.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like talking in detail of how they were going to set up each of us up for different things.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that she said is, she's like, we need to make clear that this is our house. This is not their house. This is our house, like that. And they, like, kind of, like, chanted with it, it sounds like. It sounds terrifying. Like, really creepy, wrong. Like, uh-huh. why are you spending your life doing this?
Uh-huh.
So that happened. He heard it upstairs. He comes downstairs where I'm working and some other union members. And then purposefully, when they came down to, like, run back behind the line to get to the back office uh-huh. and get their belongings when they're done with their meeting, we made a very big show on the floor being like, oh, whose house is it, Vance? And he'd be like, oh, this is our house. And I'm like, oh, is it our house? Because I think it might be our house. Like, just, like, across the floor. And they all look like these stark faces, like, completely found out. Mm-hmm. Like, they couldn't do anything about us overhearing it because you're talking about illegal activity on, mm-hmm. like, company property, you know,
right.
like, so what are you going to say to us?
Right.
So there's like, an absolute, ever since then, I feel like that was a really big changing point because it always became like, oh, no, this is my house. Like, they're going to, no. Like, and there's a running joke that I go through, like, a manager a year, and then they quit. And that's always how it's happened. They either quit or get fired.
Uh-huh.
And half the time, it's been people that have, like, actually told me, like, I just can't be between the union and the company anymore. Because the company pushes me to break the law. You guys tell me I'm breaking the law, but I'm not sure if you're just manipulating me. Because they're saying that you are, but I think they're manipulating me. Like, these managers try to work this out in their head, talking to me.
Right.
You know, and they're just like, I don't know what to do, so I'm quitting.
Right.
You know, and because it puts them in this strange position. Because a lot of middle management has been... you know, baristas, or, like, come from working class backgrounds, so they'll identify with a lot of things and a lot of the struggle that we're talking about, but be in a position where they're supposed to break the law and be told that that's company policy.
Right.
You know, so because of the running through a manager a year, I always, like, whenever a new manager comes, if they're really bad and I feel like they're trying to get rid of me, some union buster or something,
mm-hmm.
Or they've said something that's fucked up, I'll just be like, yeah, that's the interim manager. They're
right.
gone. That's the
right.
interim manager. You
right.
know? So,
right.
like, we're always just like, no.
Because it's your house.
We all, yeah, it's our house.
Yeah.
Like, we just, and that's traveled. Like, even though I've, like, changed stores to Astor Place now, mm-hmm. it's just I took that with me. So
right.
now I have coworkers that will still be like, whose house is it?
Right.
You know, and then the manager at Astor Place, like, I transferred to that store to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew it. Like, it was, like, this public declaration that that's why I went there.
Uh-huh.
And then he was gone within 6 months.
Wow.
So like, the coworkers that are still there from when I first got there and they knew that he was a tyrant, didn't want him there, now, like, have this certain amount of respect for me and the union, because it wasn't just me by any stretch, but it was, like, this international call-in we had against him because he was really misogynistic and lots of issues with him.
Mm-hmm.
So this call-in, like, pushed him into looking for another job and quitting,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it was, like, that's the solidarity unionism I'm talking about, is
right.
it's one thing to, like, torture and mistreat, like, 8 workers at this one location in the middle of nowhere or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to, like, have a moment of realization by telephone or email blast or whatever the case is, or, like, a mass picket,
mm-hmm.
that in actuality these 8 people represent thousands that support them that aren't going to take your shit.
Right.
You know?
And it makes sense,
and that you can't
too.
Just fire away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has more power. And I read a press release you wrote in solidarity with a woman who had been think, sexually assaulted in California. Yeah.
Katie Moore.
Right.
Yeah.
And she hadn't been protected by her manager, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was coerced into having sex with her shift supervisor, who was older than her and would get her drunk and all this stuff. She was 16. Mm-hmm. And she actually told, like, upper management and management at the store were aware of this. Mm-hmm. And instead of doing anything about him and the fact that he had a history of doing this with underage girls at the job, mm-hmm. instead of that, they transferred her forcibly somewhere else. And then long since working there, she filed a lawsuit against the company mm-hmm. and bravely went public with her name and face as mm-hmm. having that happen to her. When the company was trying to screw her out of any settlement money, she went public with her face to mm-hmm. go ahead and go after their public image, to which they called her a slut. They brought up her own sexual history, all this stuff. And the thing is that this dude, when he didn't even work at Starbucks anymore, Starbucks paid all of his attorney fees to fight the statutory rape lawsuit that was against him from her parents.
Because they knew they had liability for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So they paid for it. And in his deposition, where he's interviewed, in his deposition about it, he's drinking Starbucks coffee.
Oh, good Lord.
Like, it's right. just yeah. so disgusting.
And transparent.
Yeah. yeah, right?
Yeah.
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 It was terrible.
One question, you mentioned a trial mm-hmm. where it came out that they had been stalking to figure out who was involved in the union. What is the trial?
The trial was, it was a 13-month trial that happened in New York City courts through the labor board, and it was based on 30 plus labor violations that the IWW was charging Starbucks with in relation to organizing, and it involved 5 firings and then lots of other different violations of the law and the act, basically. And that trial was won multiple times. Like, major portions of the trial were won several times. Mm-hmm. And then the company, because of their unlimited resources, constantly appealed and appealed and appealed. Mm-hmm. So even though we won the trial quite some time ago, it was appealed, then we won again. It was appealed, then we won again. Then it was appealed, and we lost everything at the second to the highest court in the country. Mm-hmm. And that decision came down less than 6 months ago. We found out we lost everything. But that trial was completely finished before I even joined the union.
And what were some of the labor violations that they were?
They were reprimanding workers for talking about the union to other workers, period, like mm-hmm. outside of work or not. Mm-hmm. They were reprimanding workers for wearing union insignia at work. And that became a huge issue where it was like, eventually they finally conceded, yes, you're allowed to wear a union pin because that's our legal right.
Yeah.
But they kept appealing about the fact that they didn't want us to wear multiple union pins, and their argument was that multiple union pins would be a violation of dress code because it would be distracting to the customers and bring up political issues when it shouldn't bring up political issues and all this stuff. When, of course, anyone that's been into a Starbucks realizes that Starbucks issues their own pins and hundreds of them, and hats will be covered in them,
right.
and somehow that's not distracting, right? Mm-hmm. So eventually we did eventually like officially lose that, mm-hmm. as well as Dan Gross's reinstatement. That was a big part of the trial, was he was fighting for his job back from being fired for organizing. Huh. So we officially learned that he's not going to be working back at Starbucks again. Uh-huh. Much to my dismay. We had dreams that I was holding on long enough that he'd be back at work and I could pick him a shift at his store.
Right.
This great moment. So, but the multiple union pin thing is interesting because, like, the day after we found out we lost it, I went to work the next day and I was really certain that, like, I'm known for putting lots of union pins on my hat, and not just union pins. Like, I have a general strike button, I have a anarcho-syndicalist star, I have a Martin Luther King image because of getting time and a half for Martin Luther King Day. And I have a stop rape button because I started wearing that around the Katie Moore time, and uh-huh. not a single manager, to their credit, has had the guts to try to ask me to take that off, which is nice.
Sure.
But technically, according to policy, if it's not issued from Starbucks, and it's not your one allowed IWW button, mm-hmm. then you're not allowed to wear it. So I have a lot of things that don't fit it. So I thought they would ask me to take them all off. Mm-hmm. And my first thought was, I was like, okay, I have to take everything off my hat and just decide what union pin I want and go into work that way. And I went to sleep thinking about, oh, what pin am I going to wear, you know? I woke up in the morning and I was like, fuck you. If you want me to take off my pin, like, I'm fucking 30 years old. Like, you're gonna have to sit me down and you're gonna have to be a 19-year-old manager and tell me to take that shit off. Like,
right.
I'm not,
right.
like, you go ahead.
Right.
Like, I was like, the burden's on them. I'm not gonna do it.
Right.
So, and I'm really glad that, like, I woke up and came to my senses, as I put it, because it's so weird how they get into your brain and you're, like, ready to change for them even though you know better. You
right.
know? It's like this weird moment.
Right.
But ever since then, I've only added more and more. Now I have, like, a brand workers focus on the food chain button, and I just keep adding more labor shit from other unions and mm-hmm. stuff. And the district manager's there all the time, and her and I have had lots of beef because she's newly my district manager, but she tried to have me arrested like over a year ago when I was trying to represent a worker at a location at her district where she used to work. So she tried to have me personally arrested and then became my district manager recently.
Oh my goodness.
So we have a lot of beef.
Yeah.
But she has not had the guts to like ask me to remove them. So at some point they probably will. But I even met Howard Schultz and he didn't say anything. So I thought that was interesting. And I saw him the day after we lost the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in a way, like, I wouldn't be shocked if that was him trying to gloat. But I think I tore him down because I just went ahead and tore into him about the union anyways.
Right. Good.
Which don't is let good.
Him. Yeah. But you weren't arrested, did she? When she tried to, she didn't actually have you arrested.
Oh hell
right?
No! I don't like police by any stretch, but the NYPD is union, and I'll use that shit against them every time. Like every time they try to get me arrested for doing union activity, mm-hmm. at like they're telling the police to arrest me, and I just turn to the cops and I'm like, "You're union, right?" And they're like, "Yeah." And then I'll be like, "Well, here's the union thing that she's violating," and then they turn to the boss. That, you know, she's in a union, she has representation, you're not allowed to do this, that, or the other, we're not arresting her, she didn't do anything, this is protected activity.
Great.
Like, so it's, so,
right.
Like, to their credit,
mm-hmm.
There's been other times where they've tried to arrest our members at different pickets and stuff, and it just depends on the circumstances,
mm-hmm.
but to their credit, when I've shown up at other locations to represent workers on behalf of the union, almost every time the boss has tried to have me arrested,
mm-hmm.
And every time I haven't been. And it's been from telling the police, like, you're union, right? So you know about Weingarten rights? And they're like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, so I was here because she invoked her Weingarten rights and I was her union rep. And they're like, that's legally allowed. Like, why are you trying to arrest her, you know?
Right.
So it's worked to my benefit.
I'm glad. That,
yeah.
That at least
one
that
one cop was just like, you need to get a better job so it's a better union. I was like...
Seems
this
backwards,
from a cop.
Right?
Like,
trying
yeah,
to make
right.
it a better job with the union.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's
right.
The thing, is like the whole union idea is so detached in people's minds.
I
like
know.
You have to find a job that already has one.
Right.
Like why can't you make this better?
What would be the first steps you would think somebody should take if they were going to try to organize at work? Or try to unionize, I mean.
First off, very truthfully, it may seem like the simplest thing,
mm-hmm.
but very first thing you want to do at all when you organize is to get the contact information and names of everyone that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's your individual department or entire location, or if you work a job where, you know, other people work in different places all over the country or whatever the case, gathering that information first is crucial because you need to be able to contact people outside of work on a one-on-one basis so that you can talk about working conditions. And then when you're talking about working conditions, it's not that difficult to take a conversation from anger and hurt about particular things that have happened to you on the job and turn that into a passion for changing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like an organizer who's speaking to someone, like someone who's already decided to organize, who's speaking to someone who may not have considered it yet,
mm-hmm.
I feel it's really important to be like, what are your issues? I really want to know.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to listen to your coworkers. So, like,
mm-hmm.
get all the contact information humanly possible from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I say that is because the second there's any whiff of organizing, all contact information and connections to people get cut off,
mm-hmm.
like, across the board. And then you won't be able to get that back, you know? Like, that's a constant struggle. So I would say get that first. Start making those one-on-one connections. I wouldn't say a lot of people think immediately to have, like, group meetings so that people can talk about organizing because maybe a group of people are upset. I wouldn't suggest that. I think starting with one-on-one is the way that you get people that are going to be long-term involved,
mm-hmm.
Because they join for their own reasons. Because no one's going to join a union for your reasons,
mm-hmm.
and they're not going to stay